Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
Welcome, ladies and gents, to episode 112 of the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm Julian Klimochko.
And I'm Mike Kesslering.
Today is Sunday, January 24th, 2021. Market continues to go up each and every week. A ton of corporate actions, interesting M&A SPACs, and this week, a perhaps record short squeeze, certainly a very unique one that we're going to chat about on the podcast today. And with respect to that short squeeze, I'm talking about GameStop, that is the retailer formerly left for dead. It has a huge resurgence and it has really turned into a battleground stock. So super topical conversation. And SPAC news, the cable cowboy, John Malone, debuted Liberty's $500 million special purpose acquisition company. We're going to chat about how this legitimizes the SPAC asset class. And lastly, you're going to touch on recent business combination in the blank check space, EV charging company, EVgo. They unveiled their going public transaction through a SPAC, of course. To the market like this EV deal? I think you know the answer to that, but we want to chat about some interesting dynamics with respect to that business combination. Let's start off on a deal we were waiting for a while, certainly on our list as legendary operator and investor John Malone, along with his right-hand man, Greg Maffei, raised $500 million through a special purpose acquisition company, IPO. That SPAC is called Liberty Media Acquisition Corporation. The units are currently trading as LMACU. It's looking for a target in the media, music, entertainment, communications, and technology industries. Wanted to give a broad background on Liberty and why we like this management team so much. Liberty operates and owns interests in a broad range of media, communications, and entertainment businesses. And this whole conglomerate, the puppet master is John Malone, who's a billionaire American businessman worth over $8 billion. He's a huge land owner, fairly large philanthropist, and his reputation was created as CEO of TCI, a cable and media giant, for 24 years from 1973 to 1996. He's still active in business now as chairman, largest voting shareholder of Liberty Media, Liberty Global, Qurate Retail, which was formerly Liberty Interactive. He also owns 7% of Lionsgate and Starz. I encourage you to check out the book, Cable Cowboy, about John Malone. It's a must read for business junkies. And this SPAC specifically, Liberty Media Acquisition Corporation, the sponsor ownership is being held or attributed to the Formula One Group tracking stock, which is a Liberty entity. And if you do your due diligence into this whole Liberty complex, you'll find out that it's very convoluted with spin-offs, tracking stocks, and things of that nature. And one thing to note regarding John Malone and his business partner, Greg Maffei, and Greg is actually the CEO of this SPAC. John Malone isn't directly involved, but certainly is involved from a ownership level from the Liberty complex, is they're pretty or very long-term shareholders and not really concerned about, short-term machinations in the market and volatility and things of that nature, which is interesting because this SPAC specifically, and a lot of people criticize SPACs of, these guys just looking to get rich through the sponsor promote, things of that nature. Well, Liberty entered into a forward purchase agreement to acquire $250 million of shares upon a business combination, which means they are dramatically increasing their pro forma interest in the pro forma entity once this deal closes. So super interesting SPAC transaction from legends in the business. And if you had criticisms or a bad outlook on the SPAC asset class previously, then this really resolves that. John Malone is a big hero of this contingent of investors called Compounder Bros. Certainly, I'm a big fan of John Malone and the whole Liberty complex and Greg Maffei. So that's something to keep in mind, is I truly believe that they're really legitimizing the asset class with this deal. And getting rid of a bunch of the criticism that people perhaps had. The other dynamic that I wanted to have is there's no bad assets, just bad prices. As I indicated, we were watching this one for a while. We knew it'd be a hot deal, but perhaps a little too hot. This SPAC, the Liberty SPAC, rallied as much as 33.8% on its first day of trading, signaling, you know, some of the froth that we've seen recently in the blank check market, and perhaps at that price, too rich to own, at least in our opinion. But ultimately, who knows? It'll be super interesting to see what deal, in fact, that they do. Mike, what are your thoughts on how this SPAC IPO from Liberty perhaps really kind of cloaks the asset class in their aura?
Yeah, we're certainly huge fans of John Malone and Greg Maffei and Liberty in general. And I think an interesting takeaway here is when you mention the premium that it's trading at and all of that, is John Malone's a huge fan of getting kind of optionality for free or getting it at a discounted rate. And that's really how he's made himself a billionaire. And so I think even he himself and their team would agree with the comments around that you're paying for this optionality, that I think they will come with a good deal, but you're paying for that right
30%
now.
30% as much as.
Yeah, and that's a pretty high premium to pay. You're certainly paying for an option in that scenario. So I thought that was interesting, and that I think the management team would agree with the SPAC at its current levels. I mean, we knew this was going to be a very hot deal. It came out with only a fifth of a warrant. Which really isn't much for warrant coverage.
Which was also downsized over the deal cycle. They had on their prelim S-1, the first prospectus filing, it was noted there'd be one quarter of a warrant. And when they amended it, they downgraded investors to one fifth of a warrant, perhaps signaling the tremendous demand and the better and better terms that SPAC sponsors are getting from investors.
Exactly.
More evidence of froth.
You're seeing some come out with no warrant coverage. I mean, specifically within biotechs, that's fairly common. But it's an interesting dynamic where it's just getting more. The leverage is swaying more towards sponsors at this point in time. Now, that's not to say that will continue far into the future, but that's the current market environment right now. One other thing that you had mentioned was that it has been placed within the Formula One tracking stock. And I think that's an interesting dynamic where it gives public shareholders the opportunity to get a piece, not of just SPAC exposure, but of the sponsor economics from that SPAC. And I believe the only other way that you can get exposure that I'm aware of to sponsor level economics is with Pershing Square's SPAC through their closed end fund. But I will note that Formula One, they're tracking the tracking stock. It has a $9 billion market cap and $11.5 billion enterprise value. And so this isn't just a pure play on the economics from the SPAC sponsor. So
right.
You still do get exposure, but not just in pure play form. And that the large pipe financing forward purchase agreement. I mean, that's just a very interesting dynamic for potential target companies. That certainly makes them a very highly sought after partner for a company that's looking to go public via SPAC, and not to mention just the background and hype that would come with a Malone Maffei management team. That $250 million does talk. And lastly, yeah, this really puts a lot of the compounder bros, it puts them in an interesting position, because on Twitter, you see a lot of negativity around SPACs from the compounder and value community. But a lot of positivity towards John Malone, myself included. And so it forces some of these compounder bros to kind of align in the sand in where their allegiances stand, because are they negative against SPACs or are they positive for John Malone?
Yeah, that resulting in a brain reffing out.
Yeah, a little bit of mental gymnastics will ensue, I'm sure. But yeah, certainly a very interesting deal from us. Unfortunately, we're on the sidelines for this one.
Yeah, so you noted that Pershing Square has exposure within the closed-end fund, but I would note that Pershing Square is the first and only management team that waived the sponsors. So that exposure, I believe, would be through the warrants that they do own. So Formula One does have that full sponsor promote exposure. And on this deal specifically, I thought it was notable that Liberty reserved about 5% of the IPO for insiders and employees. The other thing that's notable in terms of just the sheer speculation in this market is that over 13 million shares traded on its first day, which is about 26% of the shares offered in the IPO. And, I think that's unfortunate because a lot of fast money hedge funds have recently come into the SPAC space only to look to flip these issues on the next day. So a lot of these are trading one third of the IPO shares offered on the first day. And on this one, 26%, 13 million shares trading. And it's just, unfortunate to see so much short-termism in the SPAC market, just because that leads to unnecessary volatility. And my warning to investors is just be careful out there. Don't pay too high of a premium and be pretty disciplined on price when getting into these things, because we are noticing a lot of froth, a lot of extreme speculation and things of that nature. So certainly looking to calm the market down a little bit, because I just believe it's unsustainable at this point. Moving on to another situation that's unsustainable is where short sellers absolutely got their faces ripped off this week as retail investors piled into GameStop shares, causing the stock to rally as much as 78% on Friday. Now, GameStop, the video game retailer stock, which was previously left for dead, I believe it was a net just recently, like in the past year or two, and by net, I mean its market capitalization trading below its net cash, meaning that investors wouldn't give it the benefit of the doubt of even liquidating. But it seemingly has come back from the dead and has rallied over 1,000% over the past year, believe it or not. Speculators in internet chat rooms seem to be colluding on heavily shorted companies in order to try to manufacture a short squeeze. And GameStop is really the number one stock for that. This company, they have attracted a horde of speculators, specifically in internet chat rooms such as Reddit and Wall Street Bets, it's called, is the specific chat room. These speculators are attempting to manipulate the stock higher, which is interesting because it reminds me of what used to happen 140 years ago. That's right, back in the late 1800s, there was a stock market speculator known as Jay Gould and a number of others who would conduct these things called corners, and the opposite being a bear raid, they'd call them. And a corner is where they try to corner the market on a specific stock or commodity and push the price up just due to overwhelming demand, manipulate it higher, and sell out prior to it crashing. The opposite would be a bear raid where they'd heavily short a stock and look to cover at the lows. So GameStop here has certainly turned into what we call a battleground stock, which is back and forth between longs and shorts. Now that short seller such as Citron Research, Andrew Left, coming and calling for these shares to crash back down to $20. A quote here from Andrew Left, he stated, "This is a failing mall-based retailer. So the amount of people who are so passionate about putting GameStop higher, not based on any fundamentals, it just shows the natural state of the market right now," end quote. Nonetheless, I mean, this is just traded into an absolute, or it's turned into an absolute trading frenzy. If you look at the volumes of GameStop shares, nearly 12 billion traded just on Friday, and that's nearly triple the entire float of the company, one of the most popular issues trading in the market right now, despite its small size of around $4 to $5 billion market cap. But, an absolute speculative mania and contingent on either side insists they're right in turning it into a battleground stock with a lot of interesting trading dynamics. Mike, what's your call on this one, long or short? Or do you just stay out of the battleground stocks?
Yeah, I would prefer to stay out of the battleground stocks. I think there just becomes way too much emotion once you allow yourself to be in kind of a high charge situation like this. And so what you had mentioned was that there's a lot of chatter between the retail community, and that's all through the Wall Street Bets subreddit. And so you know, this is a crazy situation, you know, with the stock on January 12th. I mean, the stock closed at under $20, and now it closed Friday at 65. Like, I mean, it's I believe the high of intraday was around 76 as well.
Right.
So it's just a wild situation. As you had mentioned, Michael Burry being involved since 2019.
Right. When it was Michael Burry.
So he's a very, I guess, unlikely beneficiary of this battle.
Well, assuming that he still holds it, because I think he sold about half his position in Q3 and his disclosure for Q4 has not come out yet. So hopefully he's still hanging on to those, but who knows?
Yeah, that would be one where he would just be kicking himself if not. I mean, and what Andrew Left said, all of that is true, that the fundamentals of this company have not changed. But as a fund manager, you do really have to prepare yourself for certain issues, such as this is a low float stock, mm-hmm. and it's also a stock that has the short interest is 141%, according to Bloomberg.
Yeah.
A percent of float.
Heavily charted.
So that's a crazy scenario where it kind of becomes a game of musical chairs when you have such a group dynamic like that, and you're just in a position where you can be really squeezed and lose well over 100%, right? In terms of a short squeeze, it becomes pretty dangerous from a risk perspective. I also, a few other crazy stats. I mean, I think it was Eric Balchunas from Bloomberg. He pointed out that trading volume on Friday was about what the stock had traded on an annual basis historically.
Right.
And then in the option market as well. I mean, the $60 strike call options that were just expiring on Friday, those were the most traded. And they traded over 200,000 options.
Insane.
And with an implied vol of over 1,300. That's absolutely wild. Really what's happening in this scenario, what it seems like is that the option market volume is really what's driving and moving the stock price movements, because you do have the market making community that's making a market on the options. They're having to hedge their exposure in the stock market. And so you have these secondary effects that become kind of that create these wild feedback loops in a stock. So it does lend credence to, you know, if you are invested in the equities, you do still have to be focused at least a little bit for some of these anomalies that can happen in the option market, because that will have an effect on your holding. But yeah, it's just a scenario where, you know, risk management, that's all I think about is how imperative risk management is in these scenarios and screening out for names that are so heavily shorted in your portfolio if you're a shorter of stocks. You know, it's just imperative for risk management purposes.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting dynamic that you noted, the effectively tail wagging the dog with respect to the options market on some of these names like a GameStop, where you have the underlying stock being driven by the tremendous activity in the options market, where, you know, the options market on the other side of speculators are the market makers, and the market makers need to delta hedge, that is, put on, you know, a counteracting position in the underlying common shares to offset their option position. And it creates a dynamic referred to as a gamma squeeze, where it can lead to wild moves in the underlying stock price. So interesting dynamics there. And my advice with respect to battleground stocks, I hear a commentary from just people randomly getting involved because it's so topical. They'll be like, oh, you know, I went long GameStop, or I shorted some GameStop here. The price is crazy. My advice, don't get involved in battleground stocks. You don't need to be involved in everything. And these will just give you, you know, more stress than what it's worth. I remember, you know, quite a number of years ago when Herbalife was a battleground stock, and, you know, there's easier things in life than getting involved in securities such as these. And the other thing to note is, and Mike, you really hit the nail on the head, is never short, heavily shorted shares. that's number one. I mean, you're really, it's not good from a risk perspective, right? Because you are prone to massive short squeezes like this, and this stock's gone up like 20x. The other thing is never short a dirt cheap stock. Like GameStop was super, super cheap. And historically, value stocks have outperformed. So keep that in mind. So don't get involved in this one is my opinion, but definitely learn a number of very fruitful lessons from what's happening in GameStop shares. Lastly, I wanted to chat about a recently announced business combination in the blank check space. So you had SPAC, and this one has quite the name. The SPAC is called Climate Change Crisis Real Impact One. That's right, that's the name. This SPAC had a mandate to conduct a business combination in a climate-related sector, so they certainly seem to nail it on this one. They announced a deal this week with EVgo, which is an owner-operator of fast-charging stations for electric vehicles. In the U.S., EVgo is relatively developed. They have more than 800 locations in 67 major metropolitan markets across 34 states in the U.S. Its network services more than 220,000 customers. They do have commercial relationships with GM, Tesla, Nissan. They also have partnerships with Lyft and Uber, and also host sites at Albertsons and Kroger. Just running through the investor presentation, one thing that I did want to note is some of the underlying economics on building these charging stations. And they do claim unlevered IRRs, so internal rate of return of 30 to 35% on some of their EV charging stations. So from that perspective, they do seem quite profitable. The other thing that I wanted to note on this transaction is that it does imply a equity value of EVgo, $2.6 billion. It's bringing in $575 million of cash because it, in addition to the SPAC's cash, there's going to be a $400 million PIPE financing anchored by PIMCO, BlackRock, Wellington, Neuberger, and VanEck. I did want to touch on valuation because if you look through the investor presentation, which every investor should do if they're considering getting involved in this situation or even monitoring, definitely check out the deal deck, is that they claim this deal is being done at 6.2 times EBITDA. However, this is a 2026 multiple, so 5 years out. And I should warn investors that they are comparing that multiple against others on a, say, like a 2021 or more recent basis. And if you look at EVgo on a current year basis, the valuation is more like 100 times revenue, which is certainly quite steep. However, this company is estimating a revenue CAGR, compound annual growth rate, of 151.8%. So that's something to keep in mind on this one. And Mike, obviously, this one is an EV charging deal. You know the market loved it. The SPAC stock, which was already elevated. I mean, it was already trading north of $13, so baking in a substantial premium, rallied another 64.5% on the news and now trading into the 20s. That's right, a premium of over 100% on this one. Mike, what are your thoughts on this EVgo climate change deal?
Yeah, I mean, at first when we started seeing some of these specifically within the ESG space, ESG SPACs, for which we do hold a number of these, we kind of would giggle a little bit at some of the buzzwords that were used in the naming of these. And this honestly must set a record. This SPAC must set a record for the amount of buzzwords in just the name.
Yeah, they should have gone with this. Yeah, should have gone with the symbol W O K E instead of C L I I. In my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, and so like we could giggle all we want about that, but I mean, prior to this deal announcement, it was trading at a premium to its trust value. So, you know, statistically, maybe there's some value in doing that. But you know, I will give some credit where it's due here. You know, we are talking about some of the multiples and the crazy. You know, with any of these electric vehicle companies, you're looking at, you know, multiples that are, you know, out in 2025 or 2026. Typically, is what they're quoting. But I will give credit because they do actually do have revenue right now. They do have $14 million expected for their fiscal 2020. So, I mean, credit where it's due there. It's not a pre-revenue company. And so, I mean, that doesn't make it not risky, but it is a little bit different where they do have a business model here. And I mean, the another interesting aspect, you know, a very large PIPE financing, interesting that no Chamath participation in this one. That's pretty rare lately. He's been involved in pretty much all the electric vehicle pipe financing. So that's a notable, I guess, partner that's not involved. As well, I would give a little bit of caution just around their projected IRRs and unit economics. As Julian, both you and I come from a background before moving to the buy side, a background in energy investment banking, and I don't think a management team from an energy company, specifically on the exploration and production side, has ever drilled a well that didn't have a 40%, at least a 40% expected IRR. So, you know, a little bit of caution in these expected unit economics. I can't comment on whether they'll actually realize this. Just a note of caution for anybody looking through the investor decks, as every investor deck does show, you know, just basically a hockey stick graph of their unit economics. So, you know, not to get too caught up in the hype. And one last thing is, I mean, just with all these electric vehicle companies, I mean, I honestly have a little bit of difficulty even keeping track of some of these where you have, especially with the target codes, where you have EVgo here today. And just last month we were talking about EVbox, which is a competitor of EVgo.
Yeah, right.
So it's pretty easy to get these a little bit mixed up. Interesting situation to follow, and it will not be the last of, you know, electronic or electric vehicle companies or adjacent companies. So within the infrastructure layer of the EV revolution, won't be the last with SPACs, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think you're right about that one. Now, this transaction is expected to close in the second quarter of this year, after which EVgo stock will trade under the symbol EVGO. Easy one to remember. That's about it for this week, folks. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, definitely check out more at absolutereturnpodcast.com. Leave us a review on Apple iTunes and some of the other platforms, Spotify, etc. Definitely follow us on the Twitter machine. Mike, what's your tweet handle?
It is M_Kessling.
And mine is at Julian Klimochko. So definitely give us a follow. Wish you all the best of luck in your investing this week, and we'll chat with you soon. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.